It is Saturday, January 5th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the week in geek news, and the second half, your questions and comments of technology.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today, we are covering the week in geek news, and in the second half, we're taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. If you'd like to send us a note right now, just go to geekspeak.org. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information is about Cruise.io memberships available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning, Lyle.
Ryder, you were the only one that kept power the entire time. Is that right?
Not the entire time, no. I was out for a couple hours, and I actually work from home a lot of the time, so I had to chase the power a little bit to keep working.
And we also have Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance.
Good morning.
Good morning. So let's go ahead and start the geek news. Ryder, I think I'll start with you.
Okay. Interesting article that I found. Someone has managed to do a little bit of reverse engineering on the new Amazon Kindle e-reader that's been out. Seems to be kind of a love-it-or-leave-it kind of device. Underlying it's basically an embedded Linux technology. And this gentleman, Igor, I'm going to mangle this, Shloshkinsky. He has an entry at the reverse engineering, reversing everything website, which is kind of cool if you're into reverse engineering technology.
Is the Kindle pretty cool without hacking it?
You know, I haven't played with it firsthand. To me, looking at it, I would never go for it. You know, it just kind of looks aesthetically unpleasing to me. But if you look at the technology, it's not exactly new. You know, the concept of the e-readers. You know,
right.
But it does add the element of being able to download it using cellular. You know, wireless technology and,
right.
And ordering things through the Amazon site.
But
through
pretty much device. Anything you put on it by default is supposed to go through Amazon, and they charge for most things.
I believe so, unless they have affiliates that they work
right.
with as well. I don't have to buy if you have to right, buy
but
it directly.
It's
them.
Pretty restricted, so the hacking it would be to open it up so you could put anything you want on it more easily.
Yeah, and
did he achieve that?
And no, basically the point of his hacking was to kind of explore what it was capable of, and he'd find some interesting kind of goodies, as they say. That were basically undocumented and unimplemented features. And kind of some interesting things that he found out is that it has a basic photo viewer in it, has a Minesweeper game included in it. It has some location technology that uses the Kindle's CDMA, networking.
Triangulation.
And basically to pinpoint its technology. There's also some location-based services that use Google Maps, so you can find gas stations, restaurants, things like
now,
that.
Now, was he able to enable these things, or he just kind of knows that they're...
You know, it's not clear. I haven't read in detail if he's actually got them functional, but he's basically looked at the code. He knows that it's in there.
Now, why would Amazon launch a product that doesn't have all these features if they kind of built it with those features?
Yeah, just sweeten the deal later on, you know?
Yeah.
Get
right.
embedded.
Upgrades available.
Yeah, or you know, maybe it's just could also just be like a proof of concept that they included in there and figured they'd never take it out. But very interesting blog entry on the site there. If you want to read up, you know, the steps that he went through to reverse engineer it, and it's kind of insightful. But I thought that was kind of neat. You know, just
right. Thank you very much, Ryder. We'll go ahead and go to Drew.
Well, we've been talking in the last couple of weeks about the one laptop per child initiative that's been going on. And this just in the last few hours, there has been a partnership between Intel and the one laptop per child group. But as we all know, there's there's an interesting dynamic was shaping up. Microsoft and Intel had not thrown support behind this one laptop per child initiative. Thus, the computer is based on an AMD chip and shipping with open source software. Well, Microsoft and Intel have been looking at some of these new children as new markets that they're going to perhaps go penetrate sometime in the future. And Intel made a $6 million payment to One Laptop, but this morning they severed their partnership. The One Laptop per Child initiative basically said, Intel, we're not interested in your work anymore, because Intel has designed a competing product. For $350, their Classmate PC is designed for the same kinds of things as the $200 One Laptop machine called the XO.
And it's interesting because of course this looks like a big hit against the One Laptop per Child, that there's a competitor, but the One Laptop per Child group is kind of saying, you know, this is what we wanted, was to make a market like this. So it's actually beneficial that there's a competitor. And so I guess they're getting Intel out of there so that Intel isn't part of the governing body of it kind of makes sense.
I think it's a fascinating example of a free market economy where if there is a market that the One Laptop per Child initiative is actually going to make any money on, then Intel and Microsoft will pay attention. But until then, they won't. So they have a small monopoly until the dynamics change. But I think, we all want people to be able to have access to computers. So having this happen, having the One Laptop per Child initiative continue strongly is, I think, in all of our best interests.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. I did go by campus yesterday. The campus was closed for the storm, and to see if these two One Laptop per Child laptops have come in, and they haven't come in yet, or I have them in our hands. I'm sure in the next week we'll get them. So take a look at them firsthand.
One person said, it's a little bit like McDonald's competing with the World Food Program.
Oh, man. Harsh.
Just the negative publicity Intel should have.
All right. Wow. Well, thank you for that update. Morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So what do you got for us? First news story.
Or I
could pester you about something instead. It's your decision.
Let's go to news.
All right.
I have no idea what you're going to pester me about.
I want to see him pestered.
No, you don't want to pester me.
All right, what's the news story?
Come on, what do you want to pester me about?
Last week we didn't even mention that you bought your first Apple product for your home. Now, Sean's a stout. Supporter of good technology, good hardware, and his love of good hardware is pretty strong. So, at one point, this is your first Apple product, right? That you've ever purchased.
I didn't buy it for me.
You didn't buy it for you.
You didn't buy it from Apple either.
Well, and I didn't buy it from Apple. And I got it at a really reduced price.
Okay, so you got it secondhand.
Yeah.
All right. So an iPhone.
Yeah, I bought an iPhone for my wife for Christmas.
And how is it? What do you think?
Oh, it's an amazing phone.
I mean, that's it?
It's a phone, right?
Yeah, it's a phone.
it's an Apple product, but she's syncing it to her PC.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to Outlook, and it works just fine like that.
So when are you going to buy her a Mac laptop?
There's no talk about doing that.
Oh, okay.
I don't have that kind of money.
That's true. It's pretty expensive. So,
all you guys have Mac notebooks. Did you buy it? You didn't buy those, right?
This Writer? Is a work laptop.
Yeah.
A little more truth behind this story. All this crusading about
the
wonders of Mac.
It's easy to adopt the new technology if you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's easy to be a fan, too.
I did buy a Mac laptop. Well, a lot of us bought a Mac laptop for my wife for her birthday years ago.
I'll be the first to admit that, Macs they're expensive, and it's a hurdle to commit to something not being familiar with it, leaving the Windows paradigm, and plopping down a lot of money to do it in the process.
Yeah, it's a hard
And then talk about software on top of that. Replacing all of your apps with brand new ones. Ooh.
Well, and that phone's not a cheap phone.
I got a good price, yeah. But if my wife wants a Mac notebook, what am I going to say? No?
Right.
You could. Stick with me, brother.
Is being recorded, so.
I'm really amazed by the interface of the iPhone. To get it on my wireless router, I had to put the Mac address in. I had to find the Mac address on the iPhone. And on any other mobile device, it's like next to impossible, right? It's buried. I think I did it within three finger taps, settings, about. Oop, there it is. I mean, really, maybe it was just two. Everything about that, finding the Wi-Fi, getting online, I was just playing with YouTube, watching videos. One thing it doesn't do well, though, is it doesn't seem to be able to play any video that is on a web page when you're surfing the actual,
It doesn't have a flash embed.
The browser.
That's right.
Yeah. It just doesn't play.
Right.
So that to me, I think, that could be fixed.
Well, and the history behind that is it's got the Safari browser in it. That's what's actually running. Yeah. And the Safari browser will take plugins on a Mac, but they can't. They're not allowing plugins from third party.
So that's what's going on.
And Flash is a
Flash plugin.
Yeah, it's a plugin from Adobe. So it kind of's bad, but to some degree, I want us to go to a format where the people don't own. You know, Flash is a proprietary format that's owned by Adobe. I'd like it to have video that's not that form. And there's Fedora, which is part of the Ogg Vorbis group, and that is a format.
Do you need Flash to play Windows Media Files and QuickTime? Because those don't play either.
Those are other plugins you'd have to have. You'd think that they'd have MPEG support in Page. They don't support that? Because Safari actually...
No, you can't even play an embedded QuickTime or Windows Media.
On an Apple iPhone, you can't play QuickTime?
On an Apple iPhone, yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have the QuickTime.
I asked Miles, and Miles said, yeah... That's not good about it.
There is a thing. A Google.
If it's bad about iPhone, I don't want to know.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist.
There, you can do YouTube, though.
Whoopee. Yeah, yeah.
So Sean, is that really worth all everyone talks about?
The phone?
Do you find yourself now not being able to return to life without watching videos on your phone?
On Maggie's phone?
Sorry, on Maggie's phone.
Yeah. What's really cool about her phone is
she can check her Google Mail or
Yahoo Mail really easy. It's got a nice big screen. It's easy to navigate.
She was surfing
web pages.
Easy.
It's so, especially on Wi-Fi. I think that's probably the best feature, I think, is the fact that it has Wi-Fi capabilities. I'd love to have Wi-Fi on my phones.
Yeah. Right, because you're always restricted by that.
Yeah, on BlackBerry, if it had Wi-Fi, it would be so much faster.
Oh, well, Sean, let's go ahead and go on to the news story. First news story.
Oh, yeah, news.
News.
So... Warner Brothers has announced that they're going to go exclusively to Blu-ray, which has shocked Toshiba because they claim that Warner Brothers has contracts in place that claim, you know, that specify they have to release HD DVD. So by May 2008, Warner Brothers is going to be purely Blu-ray, and in the meantime, they're going to stagger their HD DVD releases and then cut them off completely. So that's kind of big news. They feel that there's a lot of confusion and indifference towards high definition by consumers. They claim that consumers have clearly chosen Blu-ray, and that's why they're doing this. Now, to back that up, or not to back that up, but to talk about where this is all going, there's a really interesting study by ABI Research that took a look at the growing market for high definition drives moving forward, and they see that by 2012, the high definition market as a whole will be worth about $2 billion.
Wow.
A large majority, about two thirds to be exact, will consist of HD drives capable of playing both.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, there's an LG drive. I just ordered a couple at work, so I'm going to play with it and I'll talk about it. That it does. It reads both Blu-ray and
HD DVD. This was on your gift list for two weeks ago's show, and it burns HD and plays Blu-ray and HD.
So since then, I've been told, we need to test this on boards. I'm like, okay. You know, bend my arm.
I'm having network trouble today. I don't know. You guys having network trouble? All right. Sean, would you go ahead and bounce the firewire or the wireless connection?
I will.
Behind us. Thank you very much. And the next news story, Ryder, will go to you.
Okay. The FAA recently announced that the new Boeing 787 Dreamliner passenger airplane, midsize, is not gone out into service yet. Is due to come out in November, but they've uncovered a security risk that may make the navigational systems on the airplane susceptible to a hacker attack.
Oh my.
Apparently, the networking systems that are used for the flight navigation and control are at points of in the passenger compartments of the plane shared with the same networks that are integrated with the passenger, you know, the consoles on the seats and the entertainment centers.
So what you're saying is people that are on the plane could hack into the flight control?
Conceivably, yeah.
I don't think that's a good combination. I think that's a situation where two complete networks is a good thing.
So they're basically, it hasn't rolled out, but it is near completing the final stages of production.
Do you know if Boeing's doing that themselves, or are they asking someone like Cisco to come in and help them on their network? Because it seems to me it's like a...
I can't imagine Boeing's doing it all by himself.
Pretty major
mistake. They subcontract a lot, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
I guess it's good that it was caught prior to construction.
Yeah. Now, and they are, they're not completely integrated network, I think they are separated, but they're at points they're interconnected. So it's something that I mean, you'd have to probably have schematics and know network protocols, and but you know, yeah, the theoretical risk is there. So
it just, it's a great adventure movie, that's yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of scary that, you know, our airplanes are now just like completely electronic and, you
well,
know,
cars that been like that like, forever, right?
I mean, yeah, the, you know, the throttle by wire or the
yeah, the fly by wire.
Fly by wire.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. MythBusters did a show recently. They wanted to see if somebody who didn't know how to fly a plane could jump into a modern plane and land it properly
by themselves, in the movies, yeah,
like in the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And with
help from the ground control.
Well, they did. They tried it themselves, and they both crashed.
Did they use a flight simulator?
One would assume. Yeah,
they did. They used a flight simulator, really advanced flight simulator.
Are you talking?
And
about?
Then they did the whole being talked it by, you know, an expert. And what was funny was this has never happened. This has never ever happened. It's only happened in movies. So there was no one had experience talking people down from a plane. And it was just a great episode.
How'd they do?
They did great. But at the very end, they said, yeah, this has never happened. And today, it probably never will. Because they can basically put in a CD-ROM, and the plane can land on its own.
Go through the whole sequence.
The whole sequence land on its own.
Whoa.
Whoa.
In case of emergency, break jewel case.
Depending on the plane, right? But they were talking about big.
But I mean,
planes.
Do they do that? Do like do the pilots go? Ah, I don't want to land.
It's so automated now.
Sit back and drink.
Put it on snooze.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, huh? I know the 777 has a joystick and a CD-ROM drive, from what I understand. I think it's got other instrumentations too. If you really wanted to, you know, fly the plane, but it's all automated now.
Oh, so they don't really fly them?
They're there. I mean, you definitely want a pilot there. But
do they control the landing? Do they actually touch the controls as they're landing?
The landing, I don't know. But the flying part,
the flying
I think that's
part,
all
no, right, yeah,
done.
They're sitting there playing checkers and stuff.
It makes, yeah, I don't know.
They're on their iPhones.
It was a good episode of MythBusters.
Yeah, when are they not a good episode? Yeah. Those guys are awesome.
Geek approved.
Yeah.
That show is
that
awesome.
That show's great.
Five thumbs up.
Absolutely. If you don't know what we're talking about, the MythBusters is a wonderful show. On what network is it on?
Learning channels?
I even get it, so it's got to be on the cheap channels.
Yeah, TLC, I think.
And they just go through basic myths you've heard about and find out if they're true or not. Pretty good story.
And they're Bay Area.
They're local boys.
San Francisco Bay Area guys. Yeah,
they become too famous for us.
Usually in the background, you can see cool shots of the city when you're out there.
Discovery Channel, actually.
I wonder if they would come on Geek Speak.
I think they're too big wig, but I've got a connection through them to them. I'll try it out.
That would be a blast.
All right, well, let's do another few more news stories. I think, Drew, it's your turn.
I'm looking at this lame story about a singles website, so...
Alex says they're on Discovery.
Discovery, that makes
sense.
I'm
going to bail on that.
Okay. Next news story, who wants it? Ryder?
Did we ever cover that story about the social engineering on the I did cover that. Never mind.
Well, now I'm dying to know what it was.
It was like a Russian dating service site.
Oh,
and they had this
intelligent bots
that were doing social engineering to hack, basically, or to get information out of people.
This
hit
pretty big time news. The idea was they wrote a program that was flirting with people and getting their private information.
Yeah.
By flirting.
Rather
so
convincingly.
You thought they were, yeah.
But I could talk about something else.
All right.
At the CES next week in Las Vegas.
Computer Electronics Show.
That's right. That's the one.
Consumer Electronics Show.
Little tidbit, just talk about...
What did you say? It's actually next week, right?
Yeah.
You said next week? Okay.
Next week, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
You supposed to be there?
You know what? I got a guy coming on the show.
Oh.
I forgot to tell you, Lau. We have a guest. He is flying himself to CES to experience the goodness. And I said, dude, you got to come on Geek Speak and talk about it. And he's really interested in doing that. And he's a great guy. And it should be really interesting.
All right, hook him up with information.
An outsider's perspective. Fantastic.
Yeah. Fabulous.
We want to have him on the show after CES?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
CES report coming imminent. Yeah.
Anyway, a little tidbit. It's just, a new serial ATA solid state disk. Bitmicro Networks basically coming up with a 2.5-inch form factor drive that is, 832 gigabytes.
What?
Wow.
Solid state. What's the price?
Yeah. Astronomical.
Beyond anything.
They won't tell us.
That's close to the size of a what are they called? Flash cards. There's a flash card format that's that size. Is this not the size?
2.5. This is the
regular
laptop drive.
Laptop drive. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry.
God, that is exciting.
Yeah.
Eight.
And it uses the MLC, the multi-level cell technology, rather than the single cell technology. Which I think is traditionally a little bit slower at the sake of additional capacity, but they've done all sorts of enhancements.
Many times faster than a mechanical hard
drive. Yeah, I mean, and the power out.
They're quoting 100 megabytes per second still. So I mean,
and do you know?
Whoa, 100 megabytes throughput per second.
Yeah,
and I'm because of, there's no physical limitations.
Yeah, that's
solved.
Great.
Oh my God,
seek and deliver time is
every
the same.
Review I've seen says that is the best upgrade for a laptop.
A 30 gigabyte hard
drive. Solid state.
The capacity and the energy savings are dramatic.
And speed.
Yeah, but the ones that were currently available
only costs
are 30 gigs
many thousands
max,
of dollars.
Right? The current drives are maximum 30 gigs.
The capacity and the price are not there yet, but trust me, they'll get there.
I mean, but the 800 gig one, I can handle that. I'd like that on my laptop.
Have you guys been reading about the hybrid hard drives with the part physical and part solid state built in?
I've been hearing not so good about them.
Yeah, not so good.
Mostly the OSs, I think, but... Yeah, not that great, but why, you know, let's let go of mechanical completely and go ahead.
Well,
and go.
Cost. I mean, none of us could ever have a.
It will increase the speed of Windows loading, because that's what hybrid does really, by a little bit, but not as much as you would expect, because Windows just takes a long time to load.
Are they in production in this 800 gig drive, or are they saying they're going to be in production? I can't buy one right now, that way.
Pre-announcing, so it should be available for CES.
But if you have all your data on one of these solid-state drives, that kind of speed, wow.
Yeah.
I did go to their website, and they do have, like, 400 gigabyte, and they have higher-end enterprise ones with fiber channel connectivity that they're quoting, you know, capacities over a terabyte. So.
Oh, man. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Think what that's going to do to the data center when you have racks of these drives. No more spinning, no more power conditioning, no more cooling. Mm-hmm. More
there's a lot of waste that goes into rotating something.
Increase
so
performance.
Are we in a situation where we're going to see a new era of, this is just a future look thing, but are we going to see a new era of storage where we don't say, a drive fails, just give it time? Because these things don't fail.
We already live in that if you look at so on the consumer side, people lose data on hard drives. But on the enterprise side,
data's never
very
lost.
Rare because of the RAID arrays that are out there.
Right.
Well, I think you're going to have to get used to a different type of data corruption. I mean, you have your conventional concept. Well, these things do have limited capacity. I mean, they have limited read-write operations.
Mm-hmm. So
and you're going to see, and I've already seen it in certain little, flash, capacities on, that we use day to day on our digital cameras and whatnot. And I've seen in USB cards, I've seen random data corruption.
Yeah.
You see vendors that have kind of widespread issues with defects in their technology.
Right.
So you'll see it, but it's not. I don't think it's going to be the same as your conditional drives, where you hear a noise or you see spotty performance, where it's remapping, failed sectors. It's going to be a lot more, probably more bizarre type, failures.
Right. Well, thank you for that update. I'm excited about having a large. Spinless drive.
Mm-hmm. There's a technology called MAID, Massive Array of Independent Disks, where you have so many disk drives that only a little bit of data comes off of each one, and the rest of the time they sit there parked, idling, waiting for a request. And it's a way to dramatically improve the lifespan of the disk drive, they say.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like striping, but you stripe over
but
lots
you
of
never, you so many disks that you hardly ever use each one, although you get the benefits of performance out of a massive amount of spindles.
Interesting. Sounds like a cool tech.
How many drives do you need? Like, what's the minimum number of drives for that?
I don't know. The company that kind of pioneered this and is selling it successfully is called Copan. You could look at their website. C-O-P-A-N.
Interesting idea.
Yeah,
definitely. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We're now going to start taking your calls, give you the numbers in just a second. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. This is GeekSpeak on KUSP. The geeks this morning are Drew Meyer, Ryder Brooks, Sean Cleveland, and I'm Lyle Troxell. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. The phone numbers are 476-2800. You can ask us anything you'd like. Again, 476-2800. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Give you an example of what we can talk about. We can talk about making sure your wireless works, problems with your hard drives, operating system questions, software questions, purchasing questions, anything you'd like. You get a new computer for Christmas or something, and you're not sure why something doesn't work, give us a call.
We've got this huge storm going in Santa Cruz right now, and my power went off yesterday. We talked about that this morning. maybe people have questions about power supplies and surges and surge protection, and this would be an ideal time.
That's a good time to ask those kind of questions.
Very good. How come UPSs just don't work as well as they used to? That's what I want to know.
Well, call 476-2800 and ask. 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. Let's see.
Sean, you're like the Andy Rooney of Geek Speak.
How come power supplies don't start?
Yeah, I'm just
going to
whine and whine.
Don't make fun of good questions, though. Those are great questions. All right, so we'll start taking questions in just a second. Let's take one more news story as we wait for them to come in. Sean?
Yeah.
What?
I want to do some news.
All right, hit me.
Let's talk about video rentals online. It's cool stuff that's been happening. Well, maybe not so cool. Walmart's movie download rental program went away. That's not so cool, I guess.
Oh, it's Walmart's, because you were talking about the other day, and I was like, it's not Blockbuster. I have Blockbuster. Walmart
went, yep, turned it off. Then Apple announced last week that 20th Century Fox is now going to offer their films on the Apple iTunes service, the download rental service, which is interesting. And Apple's also taking it a step further, and they're going to offer online movie rental service, like mailers, just like Netflix is doing.
Who's going to do this?
Apple.
Whoa.
And they're going to rent films at $2.99 per movie for a 30-day rental.
Wow.
Interesting. Netflix has already been offering their movies for streaming. So if you have a Netflix account, you can go there, and there's about 6,000 movies you can choose from. And you can use, you get so many movies a month. You can use that to watch streamed movies on your computer. But the problem is they actually have a catalog of over 90,000 movies total.
Wow.
So they're wondering, how do we get this content to people, and how do we do it so they don't have a computer? Because no one really watches movies on their computer, except when you're on a plane. They're gonna offer a piece of hardware. It's not a computer. It's more of a set-top box for your television set. And you'll be able to download rentals directly to this to watch on your television set. It's being created by LG Electronics in the second half of 2008, and it will connect to your home network. No pricing information yet, but it's going to be a dual-format Blu-ray and HD DVD player.
Wow.
So if you got Netflix, there's some interesting stuff coming out. Yeah. That could be interesting to see.
I think I was on the TiVo website the other day, and they've now got an Amazon-related service where they can download or provide you a movie in the background.
Yeah. Oh, in the background?
Well, maybe that comes down overnight and you watch the next day. I don't remember exactly the specifics.
I know Amazon went DRM free on some of their stuff recently. We talked about that, I think. I think Dee Dee had downloaded some music that she liked from them. But movies, yeah, boy, there's a lot going on here. Apple and Netflix really kicking it up a notch. And the interesting thing is Walmart just got out of it. I mean, maybe they weren't doing it right. I'd be interested to hear why they decided to fold that. But I would love to be able to look at a catalog of HD movies at a decent price and not have to get out, into my car and go rent a movie.
Yeah.
That would just be great. And then I want to be able to, if I don't finish watching it, give me like 24 hours to go back and finish it. Comcast does that now.
So you're time shifting your movie, basically, instead of having a clock.
I've got to say, that's something cool about Comcast that I like, is the fact that they have HD movies for free that you can watch.
Wow. For free.
For free. There are a whole bunch of them. I do it every now and then. And they're older movies, but they're pretty good. And
you flip through their menu and it comes live right there.
Yeah, right there.
Wow. On demand.
On demand, yeah.
From Santa Cruz, Ellen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's your question?
I'm interested in a PDA, and I am wondering what you recommend if you're really not interested in moving to a smartphone or a phone, but simply need it for calendaring and need lots of memory for calendaring.
How come you want it on your PDA and not on the web on your computer?
Well, actually, I want the handheld so that I can sync it with my computer, whether it's my office or my home computer. So when I'm away from either of those, I have that information on my calendar and my contacts.
Does your IT department at work, I don't know anything about your work, do they have support for handheld devices? Or do they support?
I did ask if they would allow it, and they will.
Do they have a recommendation of a phone they prefer?
But they didn't.
What's the calendar software that you're using right now?
Microsoft Outlook.
So we need something that syncs with Microsoft Outlook.
You can you can cobble together your own solution, which is kind of a pain in my experience, in my opinion. Or you can ask your IT guys if they use technology that runs on. So in behind Outlook is a client for email, and it talks to something called Exchange Server, which your guys are running at your work. And there's a piece of software for Exchange Server called Good Technology, and Good will link together your handheld and your Outlook so that what you reflect, so that whenever you update one, it's reflected automatically in the other immediately over the air. So that's how I use mine, and I love it. It's the only good thing about having a phone that has a calendar on it.
Couldn't you also just have a traditional Palm handheld and do sync through? Isn't there an Outlook plug-in for?
You can. The Palm desktop will integrate your Palm into your into Outlook, and you get your stuff on there. But it doesn't.
Will it connect that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll connect it. But it's you have a conduit for Outlook, which brings the Outlook data into your Palm. But it's only as good as your last sync. So if you go home at night and put your stuff in, you have to be sure to sync it in the morning, or if you get new stuff that happens overnight while you're out, you don't have it on your handheld.
So are there currently new Palm devices or non-phone Trio type devices out there?
I don't know, being sold? Man. That doesn't do phone?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll have to ask a
if it is, it might
expert.
Be kind of funky. I don't have a very good recommendation. What phone are you using right now?
Well, that's it. My phone right now is on my husband's plan, and so it's free for me, and I don't have to think about it. And
so
I'm
not
really
advanced.
Willing to go there with changing that.
Yeah.
I think it's Verizon, and I don't even know what the phone is. I mean, it just is a phone.
Well, how about the thing is, a pocket calendar for the paper and a pencil?
You can buy a new phone for your current
plan
service, and then you're gonna have your phone and your PDA built into one. Why not do that? You just like your phone a lot.
I did actually go into the Verizon store. What they had looked pretty expensive. I mean, like $300-$400.
Right.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, check if you go to Amazon. There usually are amazing deals with rebates on phones.
Okay.
So you may not buy it directly from the provider, but find out which phones your service provider supports. And then go to Amazon and take a look for a phone that's unlocked that has a rebate on it, and then you can buy it and hook it up to your service.
I recommend BlackBerry.
Do you?
Yeah, corporate departments support that really well.
Yeah.
All the hooks are there.
It's the other alternative to Good that I mentioned, Good Technology.
Okay. Well, thank you guys very much.
All right, thank you so much.
You know what? You'll have to pay an extra $20 a month for an all-data plan with these types of phones.
But, yeah, if she wants to do that. I mean, she really just wants a view of her calendar and an electronic device.
It's going to be syncing all the time.
Yeah.
You won't want to pay for that.
No. That's the thing is if you don't have it as a phone at all, you just have it as a traditional Palm. So I asked Chris while we were doing this through text, are there Palm devices still out there? And they are, but they're not making new models. And, of course, you're going to have a whole bunch of problems with driver support. So,
my wife has one that's strictly – it's not a phone. It's just a Palm. And it's so chinky, cheesy,
I'm getting rid of my Treo. I don't use it anymore except for phone. No reason I shouldn't be using my BlackBerry.
You have both?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're a geek.
He has them both on him right now. From Los Gatos, Mike, welcome to Geek Speak.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi there.
Ooh, get the out of my face. That's
yeah, my question is, I have an older laptop, and I'm trying to find a virus solution that just doesn't use up too much CPU time all the time. Like Norton 360 just... made it slow down so much it was unusable. So I just wanted something I can run every couple of days to scan the disk for viruses, and then something that would check my incoming email too.
You know, you can use Norton. Just get rid of all of this, the background. It doesn't need to run all the time.
If you've already bought Norton, definitely use Norton at this point.
So go to Start and then Run and then type msconfig.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Start tab. Startup tab. Go in there and disable all the Norton stuff so it doesn't run in the background.
Yeah.
And then you just run Norton by hand, you know, once a week.
Once in a while.
Yeah. But what about email scanning?
If you're really concerned about email scanning, you might want to leave that running in the background. But
yeah. Well, you
Norton
know,
stuff is just so
slow.
Rather than disabling it entirely, I'd recommend that you go into the console interface for setting all the parameters and turn off the on-demand scanning that it does.
Oh, okay.
Because that's going to every file that is of a type that it determines can be could carry a virus, it will scan it real time as you access it.
Yeah.
And that's probably what's slowing you down.
Right. So you launch a new application, it's going to look at it before it actually starts.
That way you can retain the services that you do want, like the incoming email.
So it's on-demand scan?
It varies by the manufacturer, but that's – I think McAfee calls it on-demand. I'm not sure what Norton does.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is ditch your antivirus software and go use the free online scanning tools, which would completely free up your processor if you're going to do it once in a while. But there's a little more risk involved.
But that wouldn't leave him with any email protection
at that point, though.
True.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, I use Outlook, but I, you know, the sort of server is Gmail. So do you think the scanning that Google does would just be enough to protect me?
No, not necessarily. There's nothing that prevents them from delivering a virus to you.
No. Oh, okay. Okay.
Right, thank you very much for the call.
The other option
is you're welcome.
Ditch your Windows box, go to Unix or Linux, or get a free antivirus and stick it on there and just deal with the consequences.
Chris Dunphy emailed us or noted us back that their Palm does still have three models. They're very stable. These are non-phone Palm devices that allow you to sync, and you can find them at palm.com or go to geekspeak.org later today and you'll see them there. Let's go ahead and take the next call, I think. Does that seem appropriate to everyone?
Yeah, is this Woody in Santa Cruz?
Is that line four? No, Eric in Santa Cruz.
Oh.
Welcome to Geekspeak. Eric, hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I had two tech questions. One is just the Geekspeak tech question. As I was sitting here listening to you guys on my phone because I turned on the radio, I was wondering if there's some technology you guys can employ so that I can listen to you on my radio while I'm waiting. There's much better fidelity.
Well, the real trick why we say turn off your radio while you're on the phone is that when we do switch to you, if you have your radio on, there's going to be a delay.
Feedback. No, I understand that. But I'm just
as an
throwing that out there. Go ahead.
It's much less of a concern now because now it's like a 10-second delay. We're live, but 10-second delayed. So now there won't be any feedback of any sort. It would just be distracting as a listener. So once for anyone out there listening to the Geek Speak and who's calling in, as long as you're very savvy about shutting down, you're ready to shut down your radio as soon as we say hi to you, make sure to do that. The other thing is that, it gets a little distracting.
You know, what's interesting is when we're preparing for the show, there's a conference room that we sit at, and we can hear Dawn doing her show, Ask Dr. Dawn, and then we can hear her on the radio in the lobby, and there is a long delay.
Yeah, like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to the radio and you're on hold with us, right, and you just listen to the radio, you won't hear your name until we've already skipped you, because once we say, hello, you know, Eric, you there, that's
the... I was just noticing because, like, especially the last caller I had, I wondered that, too. I'm running Norton, and it slows my computer down a lot, and what should I do? But it was really hard for me to hear, like, what you guys were saying. And
we were basically saying, and I repeat, it's good information. In Norton, when you're running Norton, you can go into the preferences and you actually change a lot of the settings. And one of them is something similar to on-demand scanning. You want to disable that because once you've scanned your computer thoroughly, like an overnight scan, then what you want to do is you want to just check stuff that's coming in, like your email scanning, and and not have it scan all the time because it really slows things down. Unless you've got performance you can cope with. So we just recommend turning off some of those scanning features. What was your question, though?
Okay, my question, I have a Dell Inspiron laptop. It's like maybe 3 years old. And when I shut it down in hibernate mode, which basically preserves the state, sometimes when it comes back up, it won't come back up all the way. It'll seem like it's up, but the screen never...
Does the screen wake up?
The screen doesn't wake up. And so this isn't... I'm not talking about sleep mode. I'm talking about hibernate mode.
Oh, right. So rebooting after hibernate mode or turning back on after hibernate mode.
So, I mean, my understanding of hibernate is it shuts it down, but it preserves the state it was in when it was running live.
And this is XP?
Windows XP Home.
Are you running the latest Service Pack? Because Service Pack 2 fixed a lot of issues with Hibernate.
That's right.
I think I am because it does that, unfortunately, it does that automatic update thing. How old is that Service Pack?
Well, you can check really quick by going into the control panel and double-clicking on System.
Going into where?
The control panel.
Uh-huh.
And double-clicking on System, which will open up a little multi-tab view of
your
system.
Yeah, the general tab will tell you what version you have.
And the general tab just says right there.
Something else you might want to do is update the firmware the BIOS,
yeah.
Because that actual hardware code is located in the BIOS for the various sleep states that's supported by the hardware.
Uh-huh.
So that might have been an issue fixed in the BIOS, and then make sure you have the latest drivers installed for your,
from Dell.
Yeah, from Dell.
And so just okay.
So it might take a little extra, legwork, but especially from Dell. I bet you they fixed this. You just need to make sure that
does
you got
Dell give out the BIOS updates?
Yeah. Usually you go to Dell.com and in the support section under your machine, you'll find the latest versions of all that stuff.
And make sure to update all of those versions and make sure you're running Service Pack 2.
It's one of those nice things about not building your own machine out is actually having a company from like Dell there,
right.
Is that their support's really good.
They have to support it, yeah.
So good luck with that, Eric.
You said it's Service Pack 2, or was there some other?
Well, yeah, Service Pack 2 is going to come from Microsoft.
Okay.
And you might have that already. If you don't have that, you're going to want to download that from the Microsoft site. And that's part of the Windows update. But if you're doing an automatic Windows update, you probably are on Service Pack 2. So fixing some of the machine settings, the drivers, and the BIOS settings, which you can download from Dell, that's what we recommend. So go to Dell, look up your model number of your laptop, and download everything that they've recommended as most recent.
And where was it on the control panel that I find out what?
Oh, there's a tab called System. I mean, there's an app called System, but that is only in the classic view of control panel. I don't know what it's called, non-classic view.
The shortcut way is just right-click on my computer on your desktop if you have that, and select properties, and it'll take you right to it.
Okay, great. Right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Eric, for the call.
Now, I've got to say, I've been having a nightmare situation with my Windows XP install.
Uh-huh.
It's a real version, that I installed, and it's not, because I use a lot of corporate, enterprise stuff. But this is actually a real boxed version of Media Center edition of XP.
Yeah.
And I changed the smallest piece of hardware. I got to reactivate.
Yeah.
It never works online. I have to call and do the whole,
read the
numbers off and take them back. And then you have to answer a bunch of questions. Is this installed on one computer or more than one computer? You say, no, just one. And then, was there a hardware change? Did you change, they asked you various hardware. And then it asked, did you change the motherboard? Say, yes. And then it says, okay.
And that's the last question?
And then it says, okay, we'll give you the new number. But I've done it so many times, I keep expecting them to say, sorry, passed your...
You're out of chances.
Right.
No, not at all. It's the same thing.
They only do that after the number's been used 100 times because they know it's then being stolen, right? But if you only do it once every few months...
It's just...
And maybe they're also listening to your breath and like, yeah, this is somebody aggravated. He obviously paid for it. Okay, we'll activate it again.
But why doesn't the online activation ever work? I don't get it.
I think the online activation doesn't work if it's happened. If it's ever been used before, online activation doesn't work.
Drive me crazy.
Just keep on buying new copies. You got money.
No, I don't.
Oh, brother.
Maybe it's time for Ubuntu after all, huh?
From Salinas, Tina, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
So you've got two computers?
I've got two computers, and actually I got four computers, but two of them are acting up. One started this. When I go to shut down my computer, I have to go through the process two or three times before it will shut down.
So you have to say shut down and nothing happens and you have to do it again and again?
Right.
All right. I would say you've got an application running that doesn't want to quit.
There's a little window pop up with a timer bar that says, wait, I'm going to close this down first, and then the timer bar just goes forever?
No.
Does nothing.
Does nothing.
Okay, dormant process, trying to figure out which one it is that's causing the problem. That's the big thing. Are you up to date on virus stuff?
Yes. All right.
And this is XP?
Correct.
Okay, so
XP Pro.
So what you can do is before you do the shutdown next, is it pretty reliable?
Yes. Okay, it's in fact only a few months old and it's been very stable.
Does it always do this?
For the past 2 weeks.
So it could be an application you're running. One thing you could do is just start up the machine, don't start anything, and then try shutting down again. If it doesn't do it, we know it's something that's already always running, right? The next thing to do is go ahead and do a Control-Alt-Delete after your machine's running, and you can get a task manager.
Okay.
And run the task manager. And then there's a view of all the processes running.
Right.
And you can choose how to sort them. Choose them by memory and CPU usage. And see which ones are really top-notch. And the CPU usage, when you actually shut the machine down, when it tries to shut down, that might go really high, like 100% on this process. Then they will tell you, that will help you determine that it's that process that's slowing your machine down from booting or stopping your machine from booting.
Oh, okay.
And once you know that, it's going to get then possibly more complicated.
Yeah, but just take the name of that process and Google it, and you'll have an idea of whose what software process. It is.
It could be something very clear. It could be Internet Explorer. You know, it could be something that you know what it is.
Or something you just installed in the last 2 weeks.
Right. So hopefully that will shed some light onto what the problem is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
It's not harmful. It's just a pain, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It is a pain, isn't it? That happens to me on most computers. I run so many things that eventually I've got to kill processes to shut the machine down. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. We, in the air room, have Ryder Brooks, Drew Meyer, and Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. Answering the phones is Rick Filman. And now we're going to take a call from Santa Cruz. Again, I believe. Mike, welcome to GeekSpeak. Mike, are you with us, sir? All right, going on to the next call. Let's see. How about Woody? Woody from Santa Cruz? No. All right, one more down. Let's see. Scroll through this stuff. Who's on line two, you guys?
I don't know.
We're having a lot of trouble today.
The wireless in here is flaking terribly.
Nice and fresh, totally unknown. Hello and welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
What's your name?
Am I on the air?
You are, and what's your name?
Peter from Salinas.
Hi, Peter. What's your question, sir?
Hi, how you doing? I have an old Quicksilver G4, and I just got a new MacBook Pro, and I got my new MacBook Pro set up and everything. But what I'm wondering is, would it be a good idea or a bad idea to use the old G4, the old Mac, as a backup disk for the data on the new MacBook Pro?
I think it's going to be okay to do a backup like that. I mean, when you're talking with backup, you're not talking archiving, right? You're going to have two copies of it?
Actually, I was talking about Time Machine.
Oh, Time Machine. Oh, so starting it as a FireWire drive and using that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a very expensive FireWire drive, but sure.
I mean, because I have it anyway, and I'm going to, you know, basically it has a 60 gig and a 120 gig built-in hard drive.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking I could use the 120 for that. Would that...
Wait, are they all in the same machine? We're talking about a second machine.
The old Quicksilver G4 has a 60 gig and a 120 gig built in inside. And I was thinking of using, if I understand the way Time Machine works, it keeps your data backed up.
Right.
And you can basically kind of plug it in every day.
Yeah. So what you need to do, I mean, the way Time Machine works, the way out of default, is you need a USB or FireWire external drive. Macintosh OS 10 machines for a long time can start up in a mode called Target, which basically turns their drives into FireWire drives. So what you do is you shut down your G4 tower and hold down, when you're booting it up, hold down the T key for Target.
Okay.
And it should show up on the screen a logo of a FireWire, kind of orange FireWire logo bouncing around. Then you connect the FireWire drive from that machine to your new machine, and it will show up, both the drives should show up on of the old machine, and then you can just go through the process of Time Machine to choose the drive. Now, Time Machine, I think, is a little greedy on the drive. It could be. I'm not exactly sure how this works. I haven't set up with an external drive. It could erase the data on that current drive. So you want to be conscious of what you're doing at that level.
You can create a new partition. And I mean, if you have the capacity on the G4 to resize and set aside a partition, Time Machine will just use that one partition.
Will Time Machine do an image? Can it just use an existing partition? So I hacked Time Machine to get it to work. I changed a setting in it, just turned on network support, and now I've got a NAS device in the office through Gigabit, and I actually, whenever it sees that Gigabit, that NAS device, it mounts an image and uses that as its backup, Time Machine backup.
That's my question. Why are you using another PC? Why not use a network disk drive?
Time Machine doesn't support it.
How about
FireWire drive?
So there's a gadget that's pretty new and it's selling like hotcakes. It's pretty cool. It's called a Drobo, D-R-O-B-O. Data Robotics is the company. So if you look at Drobo.com, that's a little box that does really clever a type of RAID. It's USB attached, but you can put it on your Mac and it works with Time Machine, and it's a great target for your backups from all your machines.
Okay. I mean, I was just thinking, since this machine is there and I'm not going to get rid of the machine, you know, I could use one of the hard drives.
Yeah, you can do that. So go ahead and start in target mode and pick that drive.
How old are the drives?
Good question. Could be as much as 5 years old.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So that was one of the questions.
Yeah.
Is it too old to be doing something like that with your data?
No, it'll work. It's just that it's risky. The thing with Time Machine, the idea behind Time Machine, though, is it's a backup solution, not an archive solution. So what I'm saying that is that you don't want to assume that your Time Machine will be a storage device for you, because then you're not really doing what it's supposed to do. Your Time Machine is to save a lost file, like if you've mistakenly damaged something.
Okay.
So if you want to archive, like put stuff off of your computer and save it somewhere, you should burn it to a disk or have two copy solution for that as well.
Although it's not strictly, you know, just a backup. I mean, because you can restore from, you know, using the
you
Time Machine data.
You can restore from backup, sure.
Yeah, so you can restore from it. So it has archival properties in that respect, but it's not, it expires. Mm. I mean, there's a limited lifespan for the Time Machine as it continues to back up. So it will eventually wipe out old data.
It's more than that, though. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that Time Machine's so easy to use that you could very easily see someone go, oh, I'm just going to erase this, and it's on my Time Machine. So then they can go back in the past, and they can use the data from there. And if that's their only copy, then they're now using their only copy off their Time Machine. If that drive goes down, they don't have that data anymore. And so that's the fear I have, people using it as an archive solution rather than a backup solution. So for example, especially in the situation where you're going to use this old G4 with old 5-year-old drives, that drive's going to fail eventually. And the worst case scenario for you is that your Time Machine backup has to happen again. You know, you lose anything in your Time Machine backup, but you're okay with that guards. So you buy a new drive and you have your laptop synced to your new Time Machine backup, and you're okay. But if you've erased data off of your drive and assume that it's going to be on the other drive, and that other drive fails, then you're in trouble.
Good distinction. I appreciate that.
Certainly. Thank you, Peter.
I had one comment, other separate thing, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever, or question really, have you ever, guys ever done a show on digital audio recording and processing software and hardware?
We've done some shows like that in the past. We've been around I've been doing the show for about 7 years, so we've covered a lot of topics in that time. They're all available at geekspeak.org if you want to listen to the old shows, and you can do a search and try to find other things. But do you have a specific question?
Well, you know, just in general, I'd like to hear more about things like Adobe Audition, Logic Pro, Sonar, Cakewalk. These are digital audio editing and mixing software.
We use Audition here at KOSP, Adobe Audition here. I'm pretty familiar with that.
In fact, the only reason on my MacBook Pro, the only reason I'm using Windows is because I use Adobe Audition, and they won't make it for Mac, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, and the alternatives for that on a Macintosh are pretty slim. Logic is pretty good. Most people use Logic on the Mac to Pro Logic, but it is an expensive thing, and you have to have a hardware solution with it. I'd entertain doing a show like that. Go ahead and drop us an email at geekspeak.org, kind of talk about what you'd like, and I'll get an expert on.
Great.
Thank you so much for the call, Peter.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I don't know who we're going to next. We're having so much network problems. You'd think that geeks would have less network problems, but you know what? We're running out of time. I don't think we're going to be able to take any other calls today. So thank you all for calling GeekSpeak. Thanks for supporting GeekSpeak and listening to us, too. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. The geeks this morning were Ryder Brooks, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Lyle.
Good
morning. My name's Lyle Troxell. Answering the phone, as he does every week, is Rick Philman. Thank you so much, Rick.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
And for those listening to GeekSpeak, those called in, thanks so much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it'd just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computers and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, or on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.